This episode of the Motorcycle Show is brought to you by BlackWidowPro.com. Black Widow Pro has power sports carriers, ramps, lift tables, and more to easily move or work on every toy in your garage, from dirt bikes and cruisers up to ATVs and UTVs. Listeners can save 15% off their order by using coupon code TIRE at BlackWidowPro.com. Black Widow Pro, inspired by passion. This is the Motorcycle Show, episode 11 for October 24th, 2021. I'm Crash.
And I'm Daddy No Fun.
Oh, you guys missed the botched intro this time because we decided to not add it to the recording.
Yeah, it's probably getting old that we keep botching them.
Could tack it onto the end, I guess, as a joke. But so I'm in Hawaii. I'm really jet lagged.
Stay put, can you?
No, not really. I was in Japan for 2 weeks and now Hawaii for a week, all for work. So I got to have like a 40-something hour long Saturday. I had basically two Saturdays. It was weird.
So weird. It's like you're time traveling.
It was really strange. Like because in theory, like if you're able to sleep well on planes, it works out really nicely because you leave Japan at 8 p.m. and then you fly for 8 hours, if you can sleep, you can get a solid amount of sleep in that time. And then you arrive in Hawaii at 8 a.m. and it's technically the same day you left. So you arrived 12 hours before you left. And then you get to have Saturday all over again. But I can't sleep on planes. So I got like an hour and a half of sleep maybe and was an absolute grouchy disaster of a human being for the second Saturday.
Yeah, like you just get regular.
Oh, just crap, you know, whatever. And we were on Hawaiian Airlines and I would love to bash Hawaiian Airlines for a minute. I hate them. Basically their flight attendants all seem to have an attitude. Like they're pissed that you're coming to their state, which they consider their country. And then there's like no services. There's no Wi-Fi on the plane. The seats are like, we originally had booked a United flight and somewhere, someone, like, I don't know who in the chain of like our travel decision making, like our flights got switched without our like approval from this United mm-hmm. flight to a Hawaiian Airlines flight. And the seats are smaller. Like I said, there's no Wi-Fi. One of my coworkers has a travel CPAP and they wouldn't let him plug it in. They're like, oh, you'd have to upgrade your seat. And he's like, fine, I'll pay to upgrade my seat. Like, well, you can't do it on the plane.
Ridiculous.
And like United would have had an electrical outlet at all of our seats. So he could have plugged it in and slept. So yeah, and even like at the very beginning of the flight, they came on with this whole thing about like, you know, the standard statement of federal aviation regulations require everybody to wear a mask the whole time, but whatever. And instead of just ending it at making the statement, they were like, if you have any issues with that, please grab your carry-on and step off the plane, and you can happily talk with one of our customer service representatives. And it's like, you didn't have to like get all confrontational about it. Like, you could have said, hey, you got to wear a mask, and then let anybody go from there, you know?
And yeah. Were they, you know, it's funny too, because like I noticed this, some crews, there's always the mask Nazi on the crew.
Yeah.
That walk up and down the aisles and like scrutinizing everyone, you know, to see if somebody's fallen asleep and they're.
Yeah.
And that's a long 8 hours with a mask on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we did it for 12 hours going from San Diego to Japan.
So I would have been eating and drinking a lot. That way I could take my mask off while I'm eating and drinking.
Yeah. And like, it's one thing to, you know, I get it. We're wearing a mask. We all wore our masks the whole time. And yeah, I've been on planes where they have like somebody who's just really hardcore about it. But every time I've flown Hawaiian, even not just counting this past time, because I've flown Hawaiian a couple times now, I don't like them. They suck. Like I said, all the crews have always had, I mean, I'm sure there are nice people in the crew, but like the general overall vibe of the crew is like an attitude of like, what are you doing here?
It must be a cultural thing for that company. You know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
Like that's so bizarre. Cause usually people try to go out of your way to be nice and make, especially with the whole pandemic, everybody's kind of freaking out and doesn't really want to fly. And some people are, you know, they try to go easy on you.
Yeah. I know my flight home is pretty full. The flight when I leave Hawaii to go back to San Diego is pretty full. And I'm leaving a different day than the rest of my team and their flight is also full. Like the travel to Hawaii, like there's a lot of people vacationing in Hawaii and stuff still. Like now that like things are opened up enough that there's a lot of travel in and out of Hawaii.
Well, that's happening everywhere. Matter of fact, when I went to a wedding a couple weekends ago, I couldn't get back.
Yeah.
We were booked on a Spirit flight home. And when we got to the gate, they were oversold by five. And a little pro tip is if you ever fly, you know, on somebody's buddy pass or non-rev, the later the flight is, the less of a chance you have of getting on, mm-hmm. because people start that are typically late are showing up. So they have more time to get there.
Yeah.
So it was three of us to fly back. Plus there were four flight attendants that were deadheading. Well, actually two that were deadheading, two that were commuting, and then three pilots that were commuting. And, you know, they, some of those people, they have to get on the aircraft because they've got flights they're trying to connect to. So we had said, hey, if it's up, you know, we won't get on. But I ended up having to buy a ticket on Southwest to get home because every flight after that out of Atlanta was oversold because there's so many people traveling now and the airlines just haven't been able to pick up the slack.
Yeah.
So on top of that, they're short all these other people. So it's a domino effect. So they're short ground crews a lot. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then a plane lands, there's no ground crew and they got to sit there waiting for a ground crew to get over there. And then when that happens, they're timing out, the crew's timing out. So they can't leave on the next flight because they're out of time by FAA regulations. It's just kind of sucky right now to fly in general. But yeah, that's why I'd rather take the bike or a car or something else if it's going to be a short trip and I got the time.
Yeah. The next time I fly will be when I move to Japan. So.
Ooh, what do you mean? You already moved to Japan. You mean permanent move?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you still have stuff you got to bring back?
I don't live in Japan yet. I just went to Japan for 2 weeks for work. I'm still.
Well, I thought that was the done deal. I thought you were moved there.
No, I'm still in California. When I get home at the end of this trip, I don't actually move out until February.
Oh, so we still have time to be able to send the hitch carrier.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's one of my to-do list items for my couple of days after I get back because I've got some time. I took some time off when I get back, so I'm gonna wrap a couple of loose ends up like that thing.
So you were going to tell me that you were having some issues selling one of the bikes.
I wouldn't call them issues selling. I texted Phil almost immediately after I listed the TW and I was like, bro, I don't know how you deal with these people. Like you, as someone who sells motorcycles for a living, I don't know how you haven't murdered people yet.
All right, what happened?
Just all the typical crap of, and I guess when I think about it, other motorcycles I've sold or cars I've sold or whatever, things I've sold on Facebook or Craigslist or wherever has met with the same dumb shit, except that the TW is a very popular motorcycle, so I'm getting a lot of attention, so I get a lot of idiots as well. Like the typical stuff of not reading the listing where, you know, it states the details about the bike clearly in the listing, like the number of miles or whatever. And they're like, you know, it'll like, how many miles are on it? I was like, how about you read the listing? and I usually just answer with the actual answer. I'm like 1,000. Or I'll be slightly catty and be like, as stated in the listing, 1,000 miles. And then I left.
You are a bad dude, aren't you?
I left the listing up while I was gone. And so I just went in all the listings. I said, I'm traveling until November 1st. And I keep getting people like, you know, just hitting the automatic, is this available button on Facebook Marketplace? And I just keep replying with, as stated in the listing, I am traveling until November 1st and will not be able to, like, you know, whatever. But like, you know, or then there's also the people that just like send you like it's a 2020 TW200 and I'm asking $5,500 for it, which is a lot of money. And I understand this. I'm expecting to be negotiated down from that position and that's fine. But like, I do know that a brand new one can be bought for $47.99 MSRP, but then you've also got taxes and setup and all that crap. So mm-hmm. I know that at least in California, you're not out the door for under $6,000. You know, I listed the bike and people will be like, $2,700. I'm not going to give you any more than that.
You're like, not going to buy it.
Cool. Good for you. Or like, will you take $4,000? Like, will I take $1,500 less than I'm asking for it when you haven't even come to talk to me or look at the bike or anything? No, I certainly will not. There is one guy that's like really interested in it who we've texted back and forth and I wouldn't be surprised if he does not buy it because, you know, he's got a whole like 3 weeks to find another one. But if he's at least been rational and like we've had conversations and I'm pretty sure that if everything goes the way it looks like it would go with him, I'd sell it to him for like $5,000 and then it would be done to it. Then we'd be done with it. But like, or the people that are like, well, let me know when you're back. And I was like, I'll be back on November 1st. That's what's going to happen. I'm not going to text you, you know, hey, I'm back. I'm coming back on November 1st. I'm not going to go out of my way to let 100 people know.
Yeah, they all think that you have a personal relationship with them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what's funny is I keep getting emails and messages from Auto Trader for a car that was sold months and months ago, and it was marked sold. The ads since expired.
Yeah.
How are they able to still see this? Like, I don't even know where they're seeing it.
I don't know. That's a good question. I wonder if it's like, because there's those websites that like scrape Craigslist and Auto Trader and Facebook and stuff and like pull data from them.
Maybe that's what it is. It's not something, but it's coming through, you know, the automated, like, are you interested thing on Facebook Marketplace? It's someone was interested in buying your car. And that's from Auto Trader.
That brings
me up to another weird thing I've noticed when you talked about the price, you know, when listing something. Have you noticed on eBay, like if we're looking for camera equipment, that they'll list a camera like the one we have for like $12,000?
Yeah, every now and then I'll see that. And I
what is that?
it's QAnon, buying and selling children.
You heard it here.
That was my first thought. It's the conspiracy people. Anyway, I don't know. I've wondered that too, where you'll see like, you know, $7,000 for a used camera that they don't make anymore, or a used camera that they still make and you can go buy brand new.
And I've sent messages like sincerely just saying, hey, am I missing something? Does this come with something else? Is this like a complete system? Never get a reply back. I don't know if it's a bot putting these ads up or something. It's just...
Yeah, I wonder.
You search a particular camera body and then sort from high to low, the highs will be like three times the cost of the thing new.
Right. I wonder if it is something actually illegal, you know, like if they are selling, I mean, probably not children, but like
do it on eBay.
That's what I don't know.
You know what I'm saying? Like, apparently you can go to the dark web and buy anything you want. Like, elephant steaks or something like that.
I don't know. I wonder what those are like. Is elephant white meat or dark meat?
It's dark meat.
Does it depend on the part of the elephant?
Off track motorcycle as usual, but I've watched some of these dark web unboxing videos on YouTube. Have you seen these things?
No, I've never heard of this.
Well, apparently you can go on the dark web and buy like a box that's got random crap in it.
Okay.
And then they'll like come and open it up and there's just a bunch of junk in it. Like somebody cleaned out their garage.
Yeah.
And they assign all this, you know, weird cult stuff to this like crap they're pulling out of the box. And they're like real serious about it. It's actually pretty funny to watch some of these things. Like, just go on YouTube and look for dark web box unboxing.
Okay.
And they're very funny, a lot of them. But anyway, back to motorcycles. I've been working on the KTM little by little, cleaning it up, taking off the bags, putting the old bags back on. I came to the conclusion that if I trade it in or if I sell it to the same people you sold your bike to,
yeah,
I'm not going to get anything for anything extra I have.
Oh, no, definitely not.
Yeah, but I'm not going to go as far as like pulling the air cleaner out and all that. I'll leave that, but some of the other stuff I'm going to take off. Like, I've got two seats. I'll put the stock seat back on. Oh, yeah,
for sure.
Sell the comfort seat, you know.
I thought about going as far because I didn't have anything super custom on my KTM. I had the crash bars, and I had the little device that allowed me to remove the exhaust solenoid, like the exhaust valve solenoid. Those are the only things. And I had hand guards, and I ended up taking the hand guards off, mostly because they were annoying me. I took them off before my last trip on it, but then, oh, and I had a taller windshield, but that was it. So I just left everything.
The Cyclops LEDs, I'm not taking out the light bar. It's just, there was a lot of work putting that stuff in. And the last thing I want to do is pull that, you know, that fairing off and try and do, you know, go back to the way it was.
Right.
I mean, somebody's going to get a good value on the bike if they buy it, 'cause there's a lot of upgrades that I'm not going to take off. But, you know, the bags are easy.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you did a lot of like practical upgrades. It wasn't like it's not like either of us were out there doing like super customized crap that only makes sense to us.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, it definitely makes the bike more usable, especially if you're going to go up in the mountains. So all the Rottweiler stuff I did and the Black Dog stuff, like, I'm going to leave all, I mean, I thought about taking the bash plate off, and I have the stock one, the original one, but I'm just going to leave it on there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rottweiler stuff I did was a complete kit. So it included the airbox replacement. And I have all the original parts. So if somebody wants them, I'll give them all the original parts. Like if for some reason they wanted to take it back to stock, but I don't know why they would. The bike performs so much better the way it is now. There's the little dongles to fool the ECU, the air sensor. So you take the narrow band oxygen sensors out and you plug those, and there's a little dongle that goes in place where you would normally plug those in, and it's just a resistor to give it a certain amount of power so that it, or a amount of resistance so that it thinks it's at a certain altitude. But yeah, that would be a lot of work to replace all that. And I can't see somebody looking to buy the bike and go, oh, I don't want that, you know? So it's going to sell for whatever the retail value of a used KTM is for that year, hopefully.
Yeah, I wonder, what year is it again?
A 15. I'm going to look it up right now. Oh, okay. While we're talking.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Because I know mine, I think if I had sold mine outright, I think I might have made eight for it. Maybe, if I was lucky, eight or nine.
Like a couple of year, a couple thousand under that?
Yeah. 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 Rumble On gave me like six or something like that. Like 6,100, something like that.
Okay. So this is showing a price of 10.8 for a listing price and then a trade in value.
Yeah. Cause I knew yours would have been slightly like higher value than mine.
Well, wow. The trade in value is a lot less. 76.60.
Yeah.
Trade in value.
I might have gotten nine for mine. I know that. So there was a guy that had, I don't know if I talked about it on the show. There was a guy that rented my KTM like four times last year. And he was like, hey, I'm interested in buying it. Would you sell it? And I was like, yeah, sure. Let me think of a price. Let me look, you know. And this was like beginning of last year, I think. So I, at the time, you know, I owed more money on it and stuff like that. And, you know, it was not as old and had less miles on it. And he ended up buying a different one. But I think at the time I was going to sell it for like 10, and then another, you know, year and a half passed before I finally got around to selling it. But he made the joke. He's like, oh yeah, I would have bought it if it didn't, if it had like 2,500 less miles on it, like as a joke. Cause he put about that many miles on it. So
that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to list it for, you know, the normal.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's cause if somebody wants it, then maybe they'll, you know, they'll jump on it. I don't know how many are out there and how hard they are to find.
Yeah. I don't know.
Here's a 2015 with 36,000 miles on it.
How many miles are on yours?
32,000, okay. 11,800. They're asking for it. And that's bone stock.
Yeah. I did a lot to mine. Whoever gets mine is getting one that's in really good, like, mechanical shape too. Like I had, just before my last trip, I had changed the chain and sprockets out, tires out, had like, you know, basically the whole, like, you know, oil change, all the fluids, you know, the brake fluid, the hydraulic clutch fluid, you know, everything changed and adjusted and everything before I went on my trip. So the bike is like rock solid and ready to go now. And then I sold it immediately after getting home.
Dude, they're listing these things at a lot more, man. They're 13, 14, 15,000.
Yeah, I mean, used bikes right now, like used bikes and used cars are going for high dollar right now because of all the shortages of everything.
Right.
So you might be able to use the whole logistics nightmare that is the world right now to your favor.
Yeah, I just don't, I'm so stuck on, I mean, I know I've been lamenting about this on every show.
Yeah.
I want to buy something else. I just can't make up my mind. I mean, I keep going. I mean,
maybe if you could get rid of the KTM and force yourself into a position, and then it might help you.
I don't think so, because I've kind of fantasized about that. All right, if I didn't have the bike and I had, you know, even 10 grand
yeah.
sit in my pocket, what would I go put it down on, or what would I buy? Because I could go to WMR right now and trade the bike in on one of those, you know, Huskies I've been talking about, but I just think they're too small. Yeah. I don't think I'm gonna be happy on it. I actually talked to Christy Farrell the other night about it, and she's like, dude, those are really small bikes. And I'm like, yeah, I haven't had a chance to ride one, so, but you know.
I think I would see you happier, like maybe not visually, like liking the look of the bike more, but like on a Duke 790. Or wait, that's the same size. That's like the same size though. Now that I think about it, but I think that the layout is a little different.
Not the 790, the 690 would be. It's a 70. Well, no, they've got a new one coming out now too, apparently.
Oh, a new Spark pillion.
Yeah, it's either going to be a 900 or something like that, because they're coming out with that Norden too.
Yeah. Yeah, that like 901 Nord. I think that thing looks super cool.
It does, but it's kind of what I've already had.
Right.
You know, like yeah. I, you know, I keep thinking about maybe a BMW. I've even been thinking about maybe a little bit older BMW, like an RT or something like that.
Right.
You know,
I saw an R1250 RS the other day, and something about it, like the color combination and everything, it looked so good to me. But then I looked one up. I was like, nah, I don't think I want one of those, even though I do kind of want one. Like, it's one of those back and forth kind of things like you're having where I was like, I don't know. But
it was funny because that, you know, I've always said that, oh, if I could afford it, I would go buy an older R100 RS.
Oh, yeah. Those are one of my favorite bikes too.
Man, I tell you what, the universe is really acting weird today. One just popped up in front of my screen.
Nice.
You're not going to believe this.
Nice.
1988 R100 RS, 7,000 miles, which I find that hard to believe, 12,500.
Yeah, that's all those numbers make sense. I mean, the 7,000 miles is the one that doesn't make sense, but like the 12,500, those things are, you know, stupid valuable. They always have been.
Dude, that was a bike that I, every day after school, I'd go to the dealership and sit there and drool on it.
Yeah.
They'd give me some paper towels and make me clean it up, but...
Yeah. I think it's funny. You and I both had a high school BMW fetish.
Yeah.
Like I did the same thing at this local BMW dealership. Like, in fact, like they're probably the ones that got me to go take the Motorcycle Safety Foundation course. Cause I took it before I started riding or anything. And they were like, oh yeah, you should go, you know, whenever. And I was like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of this thing. And so he like told me about it. And you know, the dealer was like super chill.
You know, what was kind of the mystique about it for me was it was kind of untouchable, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like the price was, I think, back then it was like maybe $5,000, $4,500.
Yeah.
It was expensive, maybe a little bit more than that. And it was just so much about it. Like the toolkit was super cool. You know, the shaft drive, like the fairing, everything about it, the little, in the top of the fairing, you know, there were these like a clock and another gauge or some kind. It was just, there was something about it. Like it was kind of untouchable too. You know, to me, it was almost like looking at a Ferrari, even though it's not even close.
Right. But I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a similar experience at the BMW dealership.
Yeah. And, you know, would I pay $12,500 for one that's an 88? I don't know. Probably not.
Yeah.
Actually, this is in West Palm Beach, too.
Jump cut to the next show. On? Steve's got a BMW R100 RS. Or like, it's like so.
It says this motorcycle has been sold.
Oh no!
Looking factory track original condition.
Oh, that's funny.
You know what? I bet I know who owned this bike. Oh my god!
Do you know the owner?
I might actually know who owned it. Oh, it's so funny. That's so weird. We're talking about it, and it pops right up on Cycle Trader. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I keep vacillating. I keep going back and forth.
Yeah.
Like I feel like, you know, the other day I'm driving down the road and I see within a quarter mile stretch of I-95, a guy riding a Multistrada and then one on a trailer being towed somewhere.
The Multi is a cool bike. I hate the nostrils less now because they've kind of changed the styling. They're less obnoxious to me.
Right.
But yeah, that's a really good motorcycle. I honestly feel when I was going back and forth about which bike I was going to take to Japan or whether I was going to take a bike to Japan, I was actually kind of glad that the decision was made basically for me, that like it was going to be impractical to take either bike to Japan and I should just say screw it and get something over there.
Can you get a two-stroke over there?
Yeah, there are some. I don't know about new things, but yeah, there are some older stuff. I have no clue what I'm going to get. I definitely want like a little weird scooter of some kind.
So what we found out was that no matter what bike you bring over there, you got to still jump through all those hoops.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to have to get the inspections and stuff.
Mm. Yeah. I would definitely buy a bike over there for sure. Especially the weird scooter thing you were talking to me about.
Yeah. With the whole being able to take vehicles that are 25 years old or older back to the States, the car dealerships that are like around the base and in no other country would I trust a car dealership right off base, but everybody in Japan says that the ones right outside the base are legit. They're not screwing you over. Like they're everywhere else in the United States anyway. There's a predatory lender, like creepy, awful used car dealership right outside the base. Apparently the ones in Japan are like actually decent, but they all have stickers on the window that say whether or not you can take it back to the States. They're like, you know, we'll be ready to go back to the States in 2 years, or can be taken back to the States now. Cause they are like, they know whether, you know, like that that's a thing that would make it of interest to a sailor.
I also feel like it depends on where you're taking it back to.
Yeah.
Like you don't get shot in California, right?
I have no idea.
I can tell you right now, you're not going to have a shot in California because they're going to, it's going to have to meet all kinds of emissions crap, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't register my vehicles there anyway, so.
Okay. I just know that there are certain parts of the country, including Florida, that I personally know guys who've brought bikes back from like Malaysia that were completely not legal.
Right.
Showed up at this tag agency and they were like, yeah, there's some sentimental value here and no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that might be a consideration.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to look into it. I mean, the kind of vehicle that there's this little weird Suzuki car that I really want, that I love every time I'm over in Japan. And the era that I want is old enough that I wouldn't have to worry about it, like importing it back into the States, because I would be getting one from the 80s anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's not a big deal. And then the motorcycle thing, I'm not really sure. I'll just, if I find something that I like that I want to bring back, I'll jump through the hoops that I need to there. But
I'm gonna have you do me a favor when you're over there too and find out what the market is for the Moto Guzzi I have over there.
Okay.
Because I've heard stories that it was crazy.
All right.
But I can't seem to like look online and find anything.
All right. Well,
I mean, not that I want to sell that bike. I'm just really curious.
Sure.
Ridiculous, you know, like 30 grand, I'd be like, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Like if they're like, yeah, it's pretty hot over here, but it's not like wild, then maybe not. But if it's something, if you get obscene money for it, then okay, maybe.
I'm thinking if it's a couple grand difference, I'm not doing that. That's stupid. But
right.
I just, that maybe, and you know, probably what I'm going to do for a while is concentrate on just riding that bike for a bit, because I really want to go to Barber next year and bring that bike with me.
Yeah.
And do the parade laps and a bunch of other stuff, you know, have the bike there.
Yeah.
And I plan on camping with the bike, but you know, I even looked at newer Moto Guzzis, like maybe a V7 racer or something like that. And then I decided, no,
those are, no. I feel like you're going to find that that's small and underpowered as well.
They're all underpowered in that range.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I keep asking for suggestions. Every once in a while, I'll get an email from somebody and just like weird ambivalence, you know, like
you're in this weird space where you're not sure what you want yet.
No, then there hasn't been anything that's come out where I went, oh my God, I got to have that.
Yeah.
Which is a little disappointing and maybe saying something about the current state of the industry right now. Like there's nothing that's got me excited that's new.
Right. Yeah. I kind of see what you mean. I mean, it's,
have you seen anything that you were like,
that like really makes me nothing? No, not really. I can't. I mean, I really like the CT125s and all of the new, like the monkey and all those new little things. But
that's like a toy.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing like full size that I would really want to ride all the time.
I'm like so disappointed that nobody's come out with something where I went, oh my God, I got to have that. And after, I think ever since I went and actually looked at the Pan America, it was like really disappointed that it wasn't something spectacular.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just another adventure bike to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't, you know, in all fairness, I haven't ridden one yet, but I was expecting to see, how do I put this? I was expecting to see like Dynaglide or, you know, Street Glide level of fit and finish and, you know, on an adventure bike.
Yeah.
That's not what it is.
Right.
It's like they're building a Honda kind of.
Yeah.
Definitely not the street, you know, not that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Much nicer than that, but not their premium motorcycles.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Have you seen one yet? Up close?
Not up close. I've seen, there was actually, now that I think about it, I was in a Harley dealership in Yokohama and they had one and I didn't stop to like take a look at it. I was there looking for something for a friend of mine. And I was just kind of in a hurry, so I didn't like stop to like really stare at it. But they did have one. So I've seen one kind of up close, but not really. I hate to do this, but I really got to cut things short. So this is going to be a little short episode. I will be back to kind of regular stuff soon because I'll be back, you know, on a regular time schedule. And yeah, So follow us in all the usual places. Two Wheel Studios with the number two.
Weirdo.
Get out and ride.
Yeah.